Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ryan Lehrer on WNYC, and now we'll continue our coverage of the historic climax this month of the New York State Legislature's 2019 session, with Democrats having control of both chambers for the first time in a long time. Today we'll focus on a new bill to fight sexual harassment. You may remember the state enacted new rules on workplace harassment just last year, but then shortly afterwards, a group of women who had experienced sexual harassment as former state employees came forward to lead a charge for Albany lawmakers to do more. These women formed the Sexual Harassment Working Group. This year, their work resulted in the state legislature's first public hearing on harassment in over 25 years. That's an incredible stat. And now the state is on the verge of passing more and stronger protections for workers who face harassment, such as strengthening the current language, which says in order to be harassment, someone's behavior has to be pervasive or severe. Here's a clip of freshman state senator Alessandra Biaggi from the Bronx, who led that hearing back in February.
Acts of sexual harassment, of sexual abuse, and sexual misconduct are about power. Those systems are part of a power structure that must come to an end. Our job as legislators is to determine how any such systems may work currently and how they might be effectively dismantled, replaced with something more just and something more healthy.
State Senator Biaggi in February, and here to discuss the push to strengthen these protections and the culture of sexual harassment at the Capitol are Rita Passerell, co-founder of the Sexual Harassment Working Group. She was a senior aide to former Assemblyman Vito Lopez from Brooklyn, and WFUV radio reporter Casey Candela, who co-hosts the podcast Women in the Room, which tells the story of the long history of sexual harassment in Albany. Rita and Casey, so nice of you to come in. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
Rita, what's on the table in the legislature right now?
So there's the big bill we're looking at is S3817A7083A, and we are calling this the bedrock bill because it gives a bedrock layer of protections to workers. There are a number of items in the bill. Two of the most important is one that you mentioned, ending the severe or pervasive standard, which allows for a horrific array of worker abuse, including physical touching. And the good news is there seems to be agreement amongst Speaker, Senate Majority Leader Stuart Cousins and Speaker Hastie, as well as the governor, that we need to end that standard. However, there does not seem to be as much public statements from the three of them about ending the Farragher-Ellerith defense, which is what we call the victim blaming defense for employers.
Good. Let's get into both of those. I asked Governor Cuomo on this show on Tuesday about the severe or pervasive standard, and at least on that, as you say, he seemed to be on board with you.
Just think about that. To be legally actionable, it has to be severe or pervasive. We want to reduce that to a standard that says you are treated less well than other similarly situated people, that you are being harassed more than other people because of your sex.
So that's a pretty clear sounding way to put the potential revision in the standard. If you're being treated differently on the basis of your sex than other similarly situated people, then whether that's severely different or pervasively different shouldn't be the standard.
Right, that's exactly right. And Governor's exactly right on that point. Something that I want to mention is that New York City made this change to move away from severe or pervasive over 10 years ago. So, you know, New York State workers who are outside of New York City since then have not had as much protections. They've been, you know, subject to a greater variety of abuse because they can't enforce their claims in court. And going along with that, though, if we only pass changing the severe or pervasive standard, workers are going to hit a wall if we don't mandate that employers are responsible for harassment by supervisors. And that's what the elimination of the Farragher-Ellerith defense does. If we don't have employers responsible, workers are not going to be able to enforce their rights.
The Farragher-Ellerith defense.
Yep.
Tell us more.
So this is a long and kind of mouthful of words. These are two Supreme Court cases that essentially let the employer blame the victim. I'll give you an example of how this could play out. There's two pieces to it. If the employer has a policy that's supposed to prevent harassment, the employer can point to that to say they should be off the hook. The second piece is if the worker did not report their harassment, the employer can say they're off the hook. And when I worked in New York State Assembly, I had heard of previous complaints of harassment. So when I was considering whether I should report Vito Lopez's harassment, I had that in my mind where I had heard that the Assembly had not treated prior complaints seriously. So when a worker has heard that prior complaints haven't been treated seriously, they might not report because they're going to think it's going to be futile and they're going to be subject to retaliation. They might lose their job, something like that. And what the Fagerellerth defense does is it allows an employer to essentially benefit from their own wrongdoing and blame the victim and say, you didn't report, we're off the hook.
And the governor does not agree that that needs to be changed?
He's been silent. He dodged the question twice in a row in 2 days. He dodged the question at his press conference on Monday, where he was talking about his women's agenda. First of all, we should be calling it a workers' agenda, but any workers' or women's agenda should include this change, or as I said, workers are going to be hitting a wall. And then he again dodged the question on your show. And a few months ago on your show, he said he was going to pass any progressive changes that the legislature would pass. And you read through the recommendations of the Sexual Harassment Working Group. I thank you for that. And Cuomo went down and said, yes, yes, yes. He agreed to all of them. But now he's silent on it. And I think we need to see a more aggressive protection of workers. And we need to hear that from the governor.
It sounds like he would, I'm projecting here, but it sounds like from the things that he has said in the past, even if he's being silent on that right now, that he would sign a reform to that defense if it got to his desk. And maybe the real action right now is with Speaker Carl Hastie in the Assembly and Majority Leader Andrew Stewart Cousins in the Senate, because you're telling me neither of them are on the record either?
Well, neither one of them are on the record talking specifically about Fagerellerth that I've heard. What we did have on the record, and I want to thank Senate Majority Leader Stewart Cousins for this, on Capitol Press Room last week, she said that the Senate will pass S-3817A, and that is wonderful. That is the bill that makes both of these changes, severe or pervasive, Fagerellerth, and other ones. We haven't heard that sort of statement from Speaker Hastie. I believe that he does want to protect workers. I believe that both houses and the governor want to protect workers, but they need to show that. And they can show that by supporting this bill.
And listeners, we can take some phone calls. Anything you want to say or ask about sexual harassment in the workplace, reform being considered in Albany right now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For Rita Passarell, who's been speaking so far, co-founder of the Sexual Harassment Working Group in Albany, and WFUV radio reporter Casey Candela, who hosts the podcast Women in the Room, which tells the story of the long history of sexual harassment in Albany. So, Casey, fellow radio person from the great Fordham station, WFUV, before you talk about the culture of sexual harassment going all the way back to the 1980s as you trace it in your podcast, I want to play a clip for everybody from your series of a woman named Patricia Gunning, who was a legislative intern in the 1980s.
There were lots of alcohol-fueled events in the evenings with legislators that were paid for by various lobbying groups. What I saw and experienced were powerful men away from home, preying on many young women, including myself.
Casey, you want to expand on that clip?
Right. So that clip is from our first episode, which looks at the history of sexual harassment and the nightlife culture in Albany from the 60s to about the 80s. And it's our attempt on Prickly Politics to kind of show that the culture of sexual harassment that we've seen in the past couple decades in Albany, even some might argue until today, didn't come out of nowhere. It came out of this culture of an all-boys club, of men smoking cigars in hotel lounges, picking up prostitutes. And then, as Patricia describes, when you introduce young women in the 1980s who are interns, who are young staffers, who are students at SUNY Albany into the mix, those men didn't change their behavior. And that, you know, environment of condoning that behavior didn't suddenly end when women started working in Albany in the workplace.
Why that timeline in particular, 1960s through 1980s?
That's kind of how far back the living memory goes. You know, on the first episode, we hear from State Senator Toby Ann Stavisky, whose husband was in the legislature in the late 60s and early 70s. And she remembers the stories that he told her about the way that legislators were treating, you know, women who were in hotel lobbies and, you know, the fact that everyone fools around, name two who don't. And Senator Stavisky's husband was one of those men.
And you report on something that many of our listeners may have heard of, but many may not have, called the Bear Mountain Compact.
Right. So the Bear Mountain Compact is the idea that what happens in Albany stays in Albany. You know, Albany is not the only state capital that is far removed from the major metropolitan centers, from the major press corps of, you know, the state of New York, even though there is a strong press in Albany. And, you know, for a long time, senators and assembly members and, you know, other people in Albany could just get away with whatever they wanted because there was no accountability. They were far from their families. And, you know, it just this culture, you know, It went on for decades.
In one story in the series, a woman approaches former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver about being raped, allegedly, by another member, Michael Boxley, and Silver replies that his responsibility is to protect the integrity of the institution.
Right, right.
So, besides being a non-answer, it was certainly unresponsive to an alleged act of violence against her.
Right. So that was in 2001, and the woman was Elizabeth Crothers, who's a member of the Sexual Harassment Working Group. And that answer is so emblematic of, you know, the climate of reporting sexual harassment, not just in 2001, but all the way through 2013 after the Vito Lopez scandal, because, you know, Sheldon Silver was so powerful. And, you know, I've read the sexual harassment handbook for the Assembly from that time. Every single claim went through Sheldon Silver's office. You know, the investigators were not trained people who know about trauma. They were the Assembly Council who were on the side of the Assembly, whose best interest was not justice for the victims, but, you know, protecting the integrity of the institution and covering it up.
Rita, do you want to say anything more? You've mentioned it already, your experience working for former Assemblyman Vito Lopez, who was also, for people who don't know the name, he was such a powerful politician before his downfall. Overcharges around this. He was the Democratic leader in Brooklyn and controlled so much, like who got judgeship appointments, who got nominations to even run for state legislature, which was tantamount to appointing them because so many districts in Brooklyn are automatic Democratic Party wins. So Vito Lopez was one of the true power brokers in New York State until just recently, and you were working for him and had and were victimized?
Yes. So I want to tie in that as well as something that Casey mentioned about Elizabeth with this Fragrant Ella defense and the bill. So when I worked for Vito Lopez, he pressured workers to share hotel rooms with him. He made a whole, you know, host of inappropriate comments telling workers to not wear bras, things like that. To me, what he would do is tell me to wear short skirts, high heels, bend over, you'll be good at your job, like this woman who did that because she wore short skirts. So as I was thinking whether I was going to report, I had heard about the story of Elizabeth Crothers, who Michael Boxley raped. And I had heard about the second victim of Michael Boxley. And I had heard about the Assembly bungling those complaints. So I thought to myself, if the Assembly did not care to handle a rape complaint properly, what chance do I have with someone telling me about wearing heels? I really have no chance. Should I even bother saying something? And I did wind up saying something, but so many workers who would have heard of this might not have. And the Assembly did, in fact, later on try to claim that I never reported the harassment because I had gone through a series of hoops. I had spoken to two different people for, you know, an hour each time and told them about the harassment. Then I sent a follow-up email. Then I sent a written list of what happened to me, and they tried to say I didn't report. So tying that into the bill, we currently allow employers to do these things. We allow them to blame the victim and say, you didn't report, you didn't follow the policy, find a little hole where you didn't comply with, which by the way, we did, but this is the type of excuse we get from employers, and then they're off the hook with the Farragher-Ellert defense. So until we get rid of that, workers are going to see the same mistreatment.
Let's take a phone call. Miriam in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Miriam.
Hi, Brian. So I just wanted to point out that this bill, which my
And wait, before you even go to content, I see, and I want our listeners to know, that you identified as president of the National Employment Lawyers Association?
Correct, the New York City chapter. And we support this bill, but I just want to point out that Rita has been very careful to use the phrase workers' rights. And that's because the bill is not just about sexual harassment. It's also about racial harassment and discrimination and all other forms of unlawful discrimination and harassment. So unfortunately, workers in New York still face horrific harassment based, for example, on race, where people find nooses in the workplace, or based on religion, where, for example, women wearing Muslim clothing are subjected to abuse. And so it's important to know that this isn't really just about sexual harassment. It's about all forms of unlawful harassment in the workplace. And it's very important that all workers get these protections.
And so, Miriam, can employers use that Farragher-Ellert defense against all kinds of alleged discrimination?
Absolutely. That's federal law right now. And this bill would change that.
Thank you very much. Raj in Nassau County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Raj.
Thank you, Brian, for taking my call. I am a small business owner and a small physician practice. We employ four at least ladies, you know, and I'm completely aware of the Weinstein and the Me Too movement. I have two daughters myself. I'm completely sympathetic to your guests, and I support most of what they are doing. Next point is, Albany has a problem, and politicians, being men living away from home, do all kinds of things. I would encourage my politicians, including your guest, to put in as much regulation as they need to on the politicians. But don't do it to small businesses. Most of us are just trying to make a living, serve the community, and we are under a lot of small regulations. Anyway, all it does is it has more lawyers coming to us and say, now you need to design another policy, another $1,000. It just increases our legal, unnecessary legal bill without having committed a crime.
Casey,
please don't treat all men as predators, and just try to get a point of view of small business owners as well.
Casey Candela, you want to say something
later.
To Raj?
Yes. Yes, Raj, thank you so much for your question. And that was a concern that employers in New York City had before they passed a really robust legislation here. But what New York City has done is, you know, there's a poster that you can put up in your office that's pre-made that has, you know, standards for what's okay and what's not okay in the workplace. And actually what this bill does is, you know, if an employer is found liable of, you know, allowing sexual harassment, but they have a policy in place, you know, you have this poster, you let your workers go through training, you know, maybe an online training that's, you know, funded by the state that you don't even have to pay for, you won't be penalized as much as an employer. So the bill does provide, you know, it has provisions for small business owners who do have, you know, very valid concerns about how much is this going to cost my company.
I'll just add into that. New York City had eliminated severe pervasive standard 10 years ago. New York City eliminated Farragher-Ellert defense in 1991. Business is thriving in New York City. Businesses are not falling down. So I think businesses will be okay. And I also believe that the most important thing is to make sure that workers who are harmed have a remedy. But he makes a good point about regulating the politicians. The Assembly has a great chance here to break free from the ghost of Shelley Silver. He, you know, he made a whole litany of excuses in the cases against Vito Lopez, Assemblymember Gabrajack, all of the excuses related to them not being responsible for workers. And I think Speaker Hastie has a chance to break free from that and forge a new path, forge a good path that's protective for workers, and that he can do that this session.
Raj, thank you for your call. And Andrea in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Andrea.
Yes, I mean, I'm questioning
the logic of penalizing an institution, let's say WNYC or various institutions I've been attached to who have been wonderful forces in my life, and yet I've been harassed in these places, does it make sense to penalize the institution when it's the actual few rotten apples within an institution who do the harassing? And then if I...
Let me ask you to explain how you hear our guest's description of this bill as punishing, let's say, the institution of the New York State Legislature, as opposed to focusing on the individuals who commit the behavior.
I'm not exactly sure how to answer that question, because as I get a sense of what she's saying, the institutions are going to be held responsible for the harassing, if I get it. Mm-hmm. So they are going to have to enforce the harassers' behaviors and make sure that the women who report do get heard and that something happens.
Right. I think that's accurate, actually, Casey, right?
Right, yeah. So let me give you a really tangible example from our episode that's coming out on Wednesday of Prickly Politics. So a couple years ago, Assemblyman Dennis Gaberjack, you know, harassed his staffers, you know, incessantly. He did such lewd things, you know, some of them I wouldn't even feel comfortable saying on the radio. And his female staffers reported his harassment to their supervisor, their chief of staff, Adam Locher. And, you know, Adam Locher just said, you know, that's just how Dennis is. You know, if you don't like it, just quit. And, you know, he later, once the assemblyman stepped down, Locher told press that, you know, I had no training. I had, you know, he did have training under Sheldon Silver, which wasn't really training. And he hadn't gone through the new training once the assembly policy had been overhauled in 2013. So he didn't even know what to do. What this law would do is make the New York State Assembly liable for the supervisor, Adam Locher, not knowing what to do to report harassment. And, you know, I think that it's a valid argument to say that the institution itself is liable if they don't give supervisors the tools they need to report harassment.
Yeah. Andrea, thank you. And Sherry in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I want to ask Rita and Casey, what can Brian's listeners do to help get these reforms to change this really archaic and abusive environment that workers currently are stuck with? Thank you.
Thank you, Rita.
Thank you, Sherry. I would say the most important thing is calling your assembly members, calling your senators, and telling them you want to see their support of this bill. And I want to also go back for a moment to the prior caller's comment about a few bad apples. I think this is a false comparison. What we have is a bad orchard. When the institution isn't protecting the workers, it's not a few bad apples. You don't report to an apple, you report to the institution, you report to the whole body. And the institution now has a big chance to make a change. We have Assemblymember Lentahl, who's facing a primary challenge from the left. We would like to hear him be vocal, telling Speaker Hasty that he wants to see this change this session. We have a number of other assembly members who I think would be very important to make this change, assembly members Dinowitz, Abate. They should go to the speaker and say, we need this, and we need this for the workers in my district.
I want to play one last clip from your podcast, Casey, before we run out of time. You interview a woman named Leah Herbert, who secretly recorded some of her interactions with Assemblyman Vito Lopez, who we were talking about before, perpetrator. Here's one of the maybe less egregious recordings where he asks her to call him late at night.
At least a phone call in the morning and one text at night. And if you go to the bathroom at 4 in the morning, text me. Say, not that you went to the bathroom, but say, Vito, looking ahead for tomorrow. Something like that. Can you do that?
Yes, Vito.
And that was described to me in a summary as one of the less egregious recordings?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can hear the really egregious ones in episode 3 of Prickly Politics. And, you know, Leah A. Bear did a really good job, you know, recording Vito. And that was the only thing that, you know, saved her. So when they reported, the assembly in Vito's defense tried to say that Leah was the sexual aggressor because he made her and Rita send him text messages saying, can't wait for work, can't wait to see you. And she had these recordings. So that ended up being so important to show, yes, I was harassed. These are the horrible things he said to me.
So manipulative, Rita. So bossy and manipulative.
It really was. And I was there when Leah was petrified making these recordings, petrified she was going to be discovered. And she did this because she did not know whether she was going to be believed. And she thought she needed the evidence. And rightfully so, because the institution was so powerful that you need to do these things to prove that it happened to you, where they should really believe workers and support workers from the get-go.
Brian, I have to say that this is not unique to Vito Lopez. If you listen to, you know, all the stories that we've listened to for this podcast, you know, this is not unique. Asking people to call you late at night and, you know, trying to get people to stay in hotel rooms, it was not just Vito Lopez, it was so many others.
So the podcast is called Women in the Room, and that's part of a larger political coverage that WFUV does called Prickly Politics.
Yes, the podcast's Prickly Politics, this season's Women in the Room.
Casey Candela, co-host, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
And Rita Passarell, co-founder of New York's Sexual Harassment Working Group, thank you so much.
Thank you.